Psalm 26 in the New King James Bible, a psalm of David. Vindicate me, O Jehovah, for I have walked in my integrity. I have also trusted in Jehovah. I shall not slip. Examine me, O Jehovah, and prove me. Try my heart, mind in my heart, for your loving kindness is before my eyes, and I have walked in your truth. I have not sat with idolatrous mortals, nor will I go in with hypocrites. I have hated the assembly of evildoers, and will not sit with the wicked. I will wash my hands in innocence, so I will go about your altar, O Jehovah, that I may proclaim with the voice of thanksgiving and tell of all your wonderful works. Excuse me. Jehovah, I have loved the habitations of your house and the place where your glory dwells. Do not gather my soul with sinners, nor my life with bloodthirsty men, in whose hand is a sinister scheme and whose right hand is full of bribes. But as for me, I will walk in my integrity. Redeem me and be merciful to me. My foot stands in an even place. In the congregations, I will bless Jehovah. Before we actually get into this psalm, I want to talk just for a moment about a little bit of history and how attitudes change how things work. One of the things that people ask sometimes is, when and why did the church abandon singing the psalms and turn to man-made hymns and that sort of thing? And we often hear nowadays the argument is that we want to sing about Jesus, and we want to sing Jesus' name and about resurrection and salvation and redemption in the name of God and through his Messiah. The problem is that's the result, quite a bit, of turning away from psalms and not really the cause of it. One of the things is when the church started to think of itself, when the people in the church started to talk about how it was a different thing, a new thing, not a Jewish thing, but something new for the Gentiles. The idea of using the psalm book of God, the hymn book of God, fell out of favor because that was for the Jews. Once people started thinking that way, then these psalms that says it's a psalm of David, people started interpreting it as if it were a song about David instead of a psalm by David. And who wants to sing about some old king back in the Middle East years and years ago that talks about himself all the time and not about God? But again, the problem is that interpretation of the Psalms comes about because people forget that this is the hymn book God wrote for the church in all ages. And it was given to the covenant people who look forward to the same Jesus we look back on. And in the same covenant, people knew the same salvation, through the same redemption, through the same sacrifice as we do today. And this is a good example of that sort of psalm. If this were a psalm that David wrote about himself, as a prayer to God about himself, we've got a few problems. First of all, it becomes an intensely personal song, and it's not something that's fit for the use of the church in worship. It would be personal. As an example, it would be looking to a human as an example, and that wouldn't be appropriate either. The bigger problems is it would be a lie, because if David said these things about himself, he would be a liar who stood before God in his own strength and righteousness and would therefore be condemned to hell. And that's not the case either. And as we'll see in a little bit, there is strong, incontrovertible reasons to believe this psalm is by David, about his descendant, his Messiah, Jesus Christ. And so to read this, to see it in the name, see this as Jesus, and to sing about it, satisfies all those problems that the modern church has with psalms. We're singing the name of God. If we would sing Jehovah instead of Lord here, we'd be singing about the redemption brought about by Jesus, and we'd be singing in the covenant of grace as purchased by the Messiah. Now, this psalm starts, "Vindicate me, O Jehovah, for I have walked in my integrity. I have also trusted in Jehovah, and I shall not slip." David slipped. David slipped badly. What I want us to look at or think about as we go through here is the idea of the trial of Jesus. Now, when somebody asks you, tell me about the trial of Jesus Christ, one of the things people will come up with, there's several things they'll talk to you about. They'll talk to you about the temptation when the devil tried to tempt him to fall. And there's some of that in here, and that's what I think the first verse looks at. They'll talk about the trial of when Jesus before the Sanhedrin or the trial in front of Pontius Pilate. What nobody seems to talk about much in the church is the trial that happened after the sacrifice of Christ, when he stood before the Father in our place and proclaimed why he as the first fruits should be raised from the dead and why we as his people should be saved. And I believe that's what this psalm speaks of the most. That is the point of the psalm. Vindicate me, O Father, judge me as holy. This doesn't mean forgive me. This means see who I am and judge me accordingly. For I have walked in my integrity, and I have also trusted in Jehovah. I shall not slip. Examine me, O Lord, and prove me. Now, kids, when somebody talks about proving something, they don't mean doing a mathematical proof or forming a Venn diagram or something of the sort to show that something's truth. In older language that the Bible's written, to prove something means to test it and show that it is what it claims to be. You ever hear the saying, the proof of the pudding is in the eating? That doesn't mean that proves it's good. That means that's the test of whether a dish is good or not. Isn't by looking at it, it's to eat it and see if it tastes good. And it says there, examine me, O Jehovah, and prove me, test me, try me out. Examine me very carefully. Try my mind and my heart. For your loving kindness, your mercy is before my eyes, and I have walked in your truth. The claim here is one of total righteousness. And this is not a claim David could ever make, not in Survive. And this is a claim that if you make before the Father, you will be lost, for you are a sinner. If you think you're holy enough for God, you've got a bad comeuppance on its way. I have not sat with idolatrous mortals. Well, David did that. Nor will I go in with hypocrites. He was one himself. I have hated the assembly of evildoers, and I will not sit with the wicked. Now, doesn't this sound a lot like Psalm 1, the first psalm? Who may sit in the presence of God? Other psalms, who may ascend the holy hill of God? All of these psalms point to Jesus and no one else, not primarily. Now, verse 6, if you know your Old Testament, will prove my point that this wasn't about David. I will wash my hands in innocence, so I will go about your altar, O Jehovah. That is a priest talking. That is only a priest talking. No one that wasn't of the order of either Melchizedek or the order of Aaron could say this. Only a priest washed his hands in the ceremony of cleansing before he entered into the holy place, before he served at the altar, before he could enter into the presence of God. This is Jesus. And he's saying here that he's washing his hands and preparing to go about doing the work of a priest. But this is our great high priest who performed that work once and only once. And having finished that, sat down. Now, that what I just said should sound very familiar. That's the argument that you find in the book of Hebrews for doing away with temple worship. This priest has accomplished his mission. I will wash my hands in innocence, so I will go about your altar, O Lord, that I may proclaim with the voice of thanksgiving and tell of all your wondrous works. Jehovah, I have loved the habitation of your house and the place where your glory dwells. In his lifetime, Jesus loved the temple environs. But now, having washed his hands and performed the work of the priest and offered himself as a sacrifice of salvation, he's entering into heaven, the true throne room of God, the true temple. And he's proclaiming the truth, the glorious truth of the salvation that he's purchased. This is so much more than David saying, I'm good enough for God, so let me in. I can't believe that people are satisfied with that interpretation of a psalm of this sort. Now, having done the sacrifice and offered himself up and died on the cross, suffering all the torment of hell, and that's what he just said that he did. He then looks to the Father and says, do not gather my soul with sinners, nor my life with bloodthirsty men, in whose hand is a sinister scheme, and whose right hand is full of bribes. Sinister, by the way, means left-handed. So we have left and right hand here. But as for me, I will walk in my integrity, the proclamation that I can walk before God in my own righteousness. Redeem me and be merciful to me. My foot stands in an even place. In the congregation, I will bless Jehovah. Now think about what this is saying. Remember what we said here, the beginning first part of this psalm. Jesus was tried on earth and refused to fall into the temptations given to him. Then, having lived a positive life of obedience, He washed his hands in innocence and prepared to be that great high priest and offer that once-for-all sacrifice. And he did the work that he said that he was going to and satisfied the covenant. Then in verses 9 and 10, stood there on trial before the Father and proved that he was indeed holy, righteous, and has satisfied all the penalties due to your sin. And because he lived a perfect life and paid the proper penalty for the sin of his people, he was found holy and blameless. And then said, as for me, I will walk in my integrity, redeem me and be merciful. Then this last verse should send chills up your spine. My foot stands in an even place. He is set on a rock. He is set on an even place. This image is found in Scripture all through. But having stood the trial, paid the penalty, suffered hell, and then stood in his own integrity before the Father, he purchased not only his own redemption, but ours. And his feet are in an even place. He cannot be made to move. He will not stumble. He will not slip. In the congregations, I will bless Jehovah. And that line shows that the gospel then goes forth out into the nations, into the world, now that salvation has been accomplished, been purchased. Jesus is risen, and the gospel goes forth from Israel to the world. The priesthood now is all of us, not just the children of Aaron. And in this psalm, we see Jesus the Christ living the perfect life, dying for his people, standing before God, pleading for us and bringing us into the family of God, that we may now proclaim his word across the earth. Again, people, to look at this and see this as some king back in the old days claiming a righteousness he did not have would not put it in the hymn book, the psalm book of God's people for all time. But as a psalm of the great high priest bringing salvation and living for his people forever, it is worthy to be sung by the people of God and to take God's name in their mouth and to sing praise in joy and gratitude for our salvation. And we'll do that now, and we'll sing the second part, Psalm 26b.